This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. In 1947, a group of white men in Greenville, South Carolina, kidnapped and murdered a young black man named Willie Earle. Dozens of men confessed to the crime. They said it was retaliation after a white cab driver was stabbed. The mob falsely accused Willie. Soon after Willie's death, the men responsible were acquitted by an all-white jury. In his new book, Professor Will Willimon looks at the murder through the lens of a preacher. He explores how local clergy responded to the crime and Christianity's role in addressing racism. The book is called Who Lynched Willie Earle? Preaching to Confront Racism. Will Willimon is a professor of the practice of Christian ministry at Duke Divinity School and the former dean of Duke Chapel and joins us now. Welcome back, Will.
Oh, thank you, Frank.
Tell us more about this book. It looks at the death of Willie Earle and how it unfolded. Let's talk a little bit about the murder itself and kind of what led up to it.
Well, a young man was arrested and placed in the Pickens, South Carolina jail after the stabbing of a Greenville, South Carolina cab driver. The young man was not charged. He was awaiting charges in that stabbing. The first night he was in jail, a mob, really, of Greenville, South Carolina cab drivers came over to Pickens, about 15 miles away, and they took him out of the jail with no resistance from the jailer. And they took him a few miles between the Pickens and Greenville county lines, and they tortured him to death and called the African-American mortician in town and said, "You can find his body on the side of the road." Immediately thereafter, legal proceedings were brought against these cab drivers who really bragged about they saw themselves as doing a great, righting a wrong against their fellow cab driver, Tom Watson, who had been stabbed. Tom Watson later died a few days later. But then a trial was held in Greenville 3 months later that attracted international attention. Rebecca West came down and wrote a historic piece for The New Yorker called Opera in Greenville. All the cab drivers were acquitted, even though they had signed confessions. And I came into this story, really. I grew up in Greenville, South Carolina. Nobody ever mentioned this to me, and I found out about this lynching and the trial, really a double tragedy, as a college student. And that became a kind of lifetime fascination with it.
Now, why has it taken you this long to write about it?
Well, good question. In a way, the book is sort of a story of my own coming to terms, not only with this part of history, but with myself and my own upbringing in a white supremacist, segregationist society that was South Carolina in the 1940s. And one thing that the catalyst that really got me moving was the massacre at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston. That week after, I wrote about a dozen Methodist pastors that I knew in South Carolina who had all been students of mine at Duke Divinity School. And I asked them, did you mention this in your sermon Sunday? All of them had, and they sent me copies of their sermons. And I was very moved by these attempts of modern-day preachers to attempt to speak to this horrible event and to speak about race. And so that propelled me actively to produce this book. And I mean the book to be a kind of confession of my own growth in the matter of race in the South, and also a call to contemporary preachers, an encouragement, giving them ammunition, guidance, and how to speak about race to Christian people today in America.
Well, you also talk about one preacher who was speaking to his congregation then, Hawley Lynn, and his son.
Yeah. Hawley Lynn, this is really the story that occupies me in the book. Hawley Lynn was a young Methodist preacher fresh out of Yale Divinity School who had been sent by the bishop to Pickens, South Carolina, Grace Methodist Church. Hawley, the backstory there, his wife died giving childbirth to their first child a couple of months before February 1947. So he was there raising an infant himself and with the help of the church members. His church had burned, Grace Methodist had burned, about a month before. They were meeting in the high school agricultural room. Well, despite all of this, when the lynching occurred in Pickens, Hawley immediately called a public meeting at the high school. That meeting broke up really into a, was broken up by a mob from a nearby town who said the lynchers should be praised for what they did rather than condemned. And undeterred, young Hawley went right back to his parsonage and started working on a sermon. And that sermon was Who Lynched Willie Earle, became the title of my book. In the sermon, Hawley basically says, starts out, as we preachers sometimes do, setting it up, saying, who lynched Willie Earle? Well, we know who did it. It was a group of people from another county, embarrassed our county by doing this. But then he turns in the sermon to say, no, we know who lynched Willie Earle. We did. With our segregationist laws, with our economic suppression, repression, with our racist jokes and comments. And he ends with a kind of ringing Christian call to for repentance and for conversion on the issue of race. I could only find one other preacher in South Carolina, Baptist in Spartanburg, South Carolina, who mentioned this tragedy in a sermon.
What was the response to his by his congregation?
Well, that's a good question. Hawley, when he was interviewed some years later, and I got to meet Hawley then, he was an older pastor when I became a new pastor in South Carolina, Hawley did not remember any negative response. He remembered some negative response from some of the townspeople who weren't his church members, but some years later, when a history of Grace United Methodist Church in Pickens was published, they reprinted in its entirety Hawley's sermon as a great moment in the history of their church, the only sermon they reprinted.
As you say, you didn't find any other sermons on, or many others, in South Carolina on this particular lynching. What was the public reaction? What was the press saying? What were politicians saying?
Well, the public reaction seemed to be sort of embarrassment. Strom Thurmond was the new governor of South Carolina, a New Deal Democrat at that time, and he said this is horrible, that this has marred our wonderful record of race relations in South Carolina. There would, of course, have been many who would have challenged that statement, African-Americans particularly.
Yeah.
And the papers, most of the papers in South Carolina condemned it, although some said, well, it's a bad thing, but sometimes you have to take matters in the hands. Sadly, my hometown paper, Greenville News, condemned it, but then said, the saddest part of this is now we're going to have northern critics will come in and try to teach us how to manage our race relations. So suddenly they were portraying themselves as the victims in this.
So what have you learned in this? Because I know that you also tell a personal story. As you went back to investigate this, you found that you had more personal connections, closer connections than
you thought. One of the lynchers bears my name, Williman, which is not a predominant name, appears to have been a distant relative. Also, I knew people related to the trial, and as I began to uncover this in Greenville, found out it was kind of Greenville's unmentionable dirty little secret that they wished had never happened. But also, it sort of mirrored my own growth. I first heard about this when I was a sophomore at Wofford College, and I remember the professor who mentioned it to me said, Greenville, well, they had that lynching. And I said, lynching? And he said, well, that's right, you were only 18 years old. I mean, they only had 18 years to tell you about it, and interesting, they never got around to it. But also, I got to testify to my own struggles to speak up and speak out as a white Methodist preacher, Southerner, about race. And to say that the Christian faith, and I tried to think about these issues in a specifically Christian way, the Christian faith has a lot to say. I mean, for one thing, Jesus Christ as we've been reminded by James Cone in his book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree, Jesus Christ was a victim of a public killing, a capital punishment. The book was to say, now, what does the Christian faith, what are the resources here to speak up and speak out about race?
One thing, Will, would be sort of the courage to do that, but let's put that question aside, whether or not where you find the courage to do this if you think you're going to face opposition. But the second question is, what is the message? How do you preach about this in a way that isn't a kind of cheap grace? We're all children of God, and therefore let's learn to get along. It's a very complicated political question.
Yeah, and I've got some sermons in there where some notable preachers have attempted to preach that way. Hey, we're all made in the image of God. We all ought to try to get along with each other. I talk about racism as a sin. It is race is really not a biblical category. It's an invention of the European Enlightenment. Thank you, Thomas Jefferson and Voltaire, etc. But I think the Bible has something. The Bible has a lot to say about human differences and Jesus Christ as the reconciler of us in our differences. I think also, speaking as a white Southerner, you know, for Christians to believe, one, it is possible for us to sin, even our good intentions, and two, Jesus is in the business of forgiving sin, and that his forgiveness makes possible for us to talk about painful subjects, for us to tell the truth about ourselves and our past, and also to live in freedom. And I note that white Christians really don't like to talk about this subject, white people in general in North America, hoping that if we just don't talk about it, it'll go away. Our president says, you know, kind of, we have a race problem in America because some people, like the previous president, insisted on talking about it, which is a really dumb comment.
Yeah. Talk about some of this, too. Again, pushing back against the lies and the reaction when the horrible thing does happen, you get a couple of reactions. The first is to say, oh, well, we did this awful thing, but actually now we're the victims because the Northerners are good. The second one is sort of the myth of whodunit, right? I mean, there was a myth even around the Willie Earle lynching that there were some well-uneducated rednecks who did this. But in fact, these are pretty well-educated men.
And that I know that narrative growing up in Greenville. Southerners used to like to say, now, you know, the only reason we have a race problem is we have these poor, uneducated, disenfranchised whites, and education is the answer, or progress, etc. Well, it was a group of very well-educated, sophisticated whites who engineered the trial, which was sort of a double tragedy, and maybe even as great or greater tragedy. And there was a sense in which, as some of the African-American press said of the day, you know, Willie Earle wasn't just lynched by a group of angry men one night. He was also lynched by a group of sophisticated Ivy League-trained lawyers who used the American judicial system to get out of this crime.
We are talking about Will Willimon's latest book, Who Lynched Willie Earle, today on The State of Things. What happens when the preacher has to get into the deeper issues that support, that are the foundations of racism? I think we have a tendency to think that racism is some awful fire that we have to put out. It is a foundation of capitalism. It's a foundation of our system. It goes back to the Enlightenment and its bastard stepchild, capitalism, that needed racism in order to build the systems and the structures of finance that we all benefit by today. Can a preacher get up in the pulpit and say, you know what, our global, and the way, frankly, Pope Francis did by calling capitalism terrorism.
Yeah.
Can you do that?
I think you can. I think preachers can get up and talk about anything, a word they feel God has given them.
Is it appropriate? Do you think that's what preachers
ought absolutely. To be doing? And you've just mentioned a lot there. I mean, racism is not an aberration of the American way. It is the American way. And this is a prejudiced Christian comment, the only kind you'd expect me to make. But I don't know how people come to terms with the horrible truth of our racism who don't believe in a God who forgives, who do not believe in a God who gives you the strength to be a better person, and also to tell the truth about the systems that have produced you. I mentioned in the book, I got on the bus every day with a sign that said, South Carolina law, white patrons sit from the front, colored patrons sit from the rear. That's a tragedy. A greater tragedy is I never heard that sign questioned from the pulpit, from anybody we knew in my home. And it's that tragedy that keeps racism a major American dilemma.
What about Christianity today? It does seem to me that even Christian churches themselves, congregations, seem to be dividing along these progressive and conservative lines. And so the phrase preaching to the faithful seems to be most appropriate in this situation. Are you reaching new people with this message?
Yeah, I think I have some instances there of churches that really said, we are going to be not simply racially inclusive, but racially courageous. We're going to speak up, speak out. And they have found there are lots of Americans that are in agony over this subject, that are really looking for a group of people attempting to form a different kind of community, attempting to tell the truth. I know I've been in a situation in Alabama during some of our immigration fights there that I began a sermon by saying, okay, shut the doors now. We're going to have a painful conversation, Christian to Christian here. And I want to say this is a conversation you cannot get off the TV. You will not hear, led by Senator Jeff Sessions. You got to come to church. You get dressed and come down at an inconvenient time of the week to hear talk like this. Well, I think church ought to be that kind of place. And I bet there's a yearning among many people for church to be that community of truth.
Will Willimon, author of the new book, Who Lynched Willie Earl? Preaching to Confront Racism, also the former dean of Duke Chapel. Always a pleasure, Will. Thank you so
much.
Thank you.
Right.
You can find out more about the book at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.